Do you have investment properties you're considering selling and would like to learn how to defer the tax consequences? Then you need to call Equity Advantage and learn about a 1031 exchange. A 1031 exchange is a powerful investment tool. It enables you to keep a property's equity intact when it's used to acquire like-kind replacement property of equal or greater value and equity, even if you recently acquired the property. For over 30 years, Equity Advantage has been providing investors solutions for deferring taxes and maximizing the value of investments through a 1031 exchange. At Equity Advantage, we don't sell investments, but rather provide the tax deferment tools and expertise to facilitate their sale and transfer. Learn more by going to 1031exchange.com or Google YouTube Equity Advantage for in-depth videos. Listen, you've worked hard for the money in your investments. Equity Advantage works hard to keep it yours.
Learn more about 1031 exchanges and Equity Advantage at 1031exchange.com. That's 1031exchange.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and happy First Amendment Friday. It's the day that you get a chance to practice your First Amendment freedoms. It's also heading into the weekend when we recognize those who made the ultimate sacrifice in uniform. It is Memorial Day weekend. Pleasure to be with you. Glad to have you join me on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to take your calls. We've got a whole bunch to talk about, and some of it might actually surprise you, especially if you're getting your news from the mainstream media. Government, I believe, helped set the conditions for a fire that destroyed a major downtown apartment building. It was actually caused by arson. They have a man in custody who is charged with a crime. He's not yet been convicted. But I'm going to tell you why government helped create the conditions that made that happen. I'll make the indictment here in just a moment. But first, welcome to the program. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every weekday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you happen to be a naysayer, we love naysayers. We'll put you right to the head of the line. Just bring a little courage, the courage of your convictions, a few good arguments, maybe a fact or two that would help, and be a naysayer at 866-439-5277. You can also vote in our Twitter poll. And I have a feeling you're not going to hear about this story a lot of other places. But let me ask you the question generically, and this is the way we phrased it for the Twitter poll. I don't think it involves just Democrat member of Congress Andrea Salinas. But if a candidate tells a major lie to get elected, and she knows she's lying when she does the lying, and she's told that what she's saying is a lie by somebody uninvolved in the campaign of the man she's running against. If a candidate tells a big lie to get elected and knows she's lying when she does it, should she have to give up her seat? Now, I would answer that one yes. We're going to talk to the man she lied about just a little bit later on this hour, and we're going to give you all the information. And as I said, don't expect this story to pop up in the other major media, but we're relying on court documents in which the court found that member of Congress and Democrat Andrea Salinas lied during her campaign, knew that she was lying, was put on notice by a district attorney, you are lying in your ads, and that lie actually made a difference in the race, and she won. If it's proved that she was lying and knew she was lying and she won because of the lies, should she have to give up her seat in Congress? As I said, I would say yes. You can find the poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I told you how even Republicans in Salem, and I suppose a few in Olympia as well, have suggested that we have to throw hundreds of millions of dollars more into education. I asked one of those Republicans, well, is there any evidence whatsoever that shows that throwing all that extra money into the schools will make a difference for the kids? And the answer is no. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary that shows that increasing funding in education like that, like what they're proposing to do right now with your money in Salem, is not going to make a darn bit of difference for the kids. Now, it does make a difference for the teachers. It does make a difference for the teachers' unions. But if it doesn't make a difference for the kids, why do it? 92% of you said it would produce the same result. Only 8% of you thought that adding some cash would actually make a different result. In any case, glad to be with you. Let me make this case. There was a major fire, a five-story apartment building full of people, which means lives were put at risk, not just the people who live there. But when this major fire broke out about 10 days ago at Southwest 14th and Taylor, it happened to be in Portland, the building was engulfed in smoke. Windows were blown out. At least a couple of firefighters ended up injured, but thank God not dead. And everybody made it out of the building safe and sound, you know, albeit with the injuries to the firefighters. As one of the firefighters said, fire blew out the windows. We're not sure if that was a result of a backdraft, but there were reports that the fire aggressively broke out windows on the fourth floor and sent glass out into the street. And all these people were displaced. Now, why did this happen? The man who's now facing charges of arson, his name is Garrett Rep. He's 30 years old. Now, he'd been a problem in this building. Well, you'd say, well, why didn't the landlord kick him out? He'd stopped paying the rent more than 3 months ago, and he finally got his eviction notice on the 4th of May. He was also subject to a stalking order that came down the day before the fire was set. Now, as I said, Garrett Rep has a right to his day in court. He has a right to be represented, and they will have to prove the charge of arson. He's now facing, I believe it's about 30 different charges related to this fire that, thank God, didn't hurt anybody seriously, didn't kill anybody, but we can all imagine how it might have. It was a major league fire. But this guy went 3 months paying no rent and was apparently a problem. He was described as he's just been a wrecking ball. So bad that they had to get a stalking order against the guy. That comes down the day before the blaze, but he's still in the building, which means nothing was done to get this dangerous person out of the building. And why is that? And why did he think he could go 3 months paying no rent? I'd remind you, Oregon government and Washington, the same, have educated people over the last couple of years using the pandemic as an excuse. You don't have to pay the rent. You can live there for free. You may never have to pay the rent. They have waged war on landlords. I don't happen to be a landlord today, but I have been decades before. But they've effectively educated some people, the people who would take advantage of this. I know that most of you would pay your rent regardless because you honor your commitments. But in this case, they've told a lot of people, don't pay the rent. They can't kick you out. Don't worry about it. This guy goes 3 months not paying the rent. He's so obnoxious to his fellow tenants, they have to get a stalking court order against him. That comes down, and the next day, the building is on fire and lives are at risk. So I would argue that the actions of government, you know, Mr. Rep may have actually committed the crime. He's accused of the crime. But Mr. Rep's actions were aided and abetted by government. And government needs to change those issues, those policies. And I've had people complain before, Lars, you gripe a lot about stuff, but tell us the solution. The solution is to hold people to their commitments. If you don't pay the rent, you get kicked out. If you're an obnoxious tenant to everybody else in the building, you get kicked out. Well, you know that Oregon and Washington have both said, no, you can't have no-cause evictions. We're going to make the process long and tortured and expensive to kick somebody out who's creating a problem for others. In this case, the problem Mr. Rep is accused of doing, again, day in court, he's accused of doing something that put people's lives at risk. People could have easily died because of this fire. Firefighters could have easily been more seriously injured or died because of this fire. And all of this because government lets it happen and lets a tiny minority of people decide that they're going to create problems for the people around them and they're not going to do anything about it. It's a First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And coming up on the Northwest Nonsense, you want to find the most expensive housing in the Pacific Northwest? It ain't on Mercer Island or West Lynn or Lake Oswego. It is the low-income, affordable housing created by, you guessed it, the government. That's coming up next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
If you want the most expensive housing you can find in the Pacific Northwest, you don't need to look to Lake Oswego, Medina, West Lynn, or Mercer Island. No, you're going to find it in the places where state governments build what they deceptively tell the taxpayers is affordable housing. Governor Tina Kotek's latest such project sits in Montevilla, which is a middle-class, working-class neighborhood. Kotek plans to spend the kind of money on affordable housing that you would pay to get a luxury mansion almost anywhere in America. Now, you're going to want me to prove that. I will. Here's the context. The average apartment constructed in America across the whole country runs $125 a square foot. I got that from the apartment building industry. High-end builders spend about $200 a square foot. San Francisco clocks in at $300. Los Angeles at $500 a square foot, about what you'd pay for a Pearl District condominium. The state-sponsored, allegedly affordable Gleason family apartments in that working-class neighborhood, they're coming in at well over $700 a square foot, $53 million in taxpayer money to build less than 100 apartment units. That is Tent City Tina Kotek's definition of affordable, and all of us are paying the bill. Now, here's my proposal as the solution. A national group that represents apartment owners and builders says government regulation is fully one-third the cost of every apartment built in America. Let the private sector do the job. First of all, that'll save a bunch of money. And the government can spend far less by just wiping out the crazy fees that currently make construction so expensive. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Better Basements and Waterproofing. Water in your crawl space or basement? Call Better Basements and Waterproofing.
Well, today I'm going to give the grill to Member of Congress Andrea Salinas, who is also a member of the Democrat Party, Party of Slavery, since 1829. A court has now decided that she lied about her opponent in the race that put her in office. And she kept on lying about it after being informed by the district attorney, somebody not involved in Mike Erickson's campaign, that she was telling a lie. She was told she was telling a lie, and she kept on telling the lie, and she won the seat based on lies. Our Twitter poll question today is, if a candidate does something like that, should she have to give up her seat? At least she gets the grill from me, and I think she ought to give up her seat. Today's best email, and then I'm going to talk to Mike Erickson himself, comes from David Miles at Conrad Forest Products. Lars, I read where more and more bears are showing up in urban cities in the Northwest. I say let them roam, as these liberal cities that voted for the measures back in the 90s to not control the population by dog hunting. Now they're reaping the benefits of that mismanagement. Will the state step in and make changes? Doubt it. We see the ineptitude of wolf management. What's next? Grizzly reintroduction. Keep up the conservative fight. Signed, David Miles. Now, I want to bring on Mike Erickson, who ran for Congress and lost against Andrea Salinas, who lied during her campaign, and she was put on notice that she was lying. Mike, welcome back to the program. What has now become public record and available for anyone to see about the lies of Andrea Salinas?
Well, just recently, well, first of all, thanks, Lars, for having me on the show with you today.
Sure.
Just recently, the courts in Clackamas just released the 127-page documents that reviewed and, all the court findings, the judges' rulings, all the statements, and was made public. I just read this for the first time, a few weeks ago, and I'm sure Salinas just got it. And it's pretty embarrassing for her. And the judge concluded that she crossed this line and lied to voters. And, you can read it in the 127-page report there.
She made statements that, quoting the court, the papers that you've provided me with, statements about you, Mike Erickson, that were not true. Those are the words of the court. So if she lied during the campaign, and you believe, based on polling, that those lies helped her win, correct?
Absolutely.
What did your campaign do to prove that the lies made a difference?
We actually went out and surveyed right immediately after the election, had two different pollsters survey the people that voted in our sixth district. We surveyed about 900 voters and asked, who'd you vote for in the election? Did you vote for Andrea Salinas or Mike Erickson? And did you vote? And for the ones that said, yes, I did vote, and we voted for Andrea Salinas, we asked them, why did you vote for Salinas? And 4 to 6% of all the people we surveyed stated that when they voted for Salinas, they changed their vote from me to her because of the ads about drugs and some lies that she was putting on TV. But we proved those aren't.
Her lies actually said that she ran ads that said that you had illegal possession of controlled substance charges brought against you. Was that ever true?
No, absolutely never true. The DA told her that. Our attorney sent her cease and desist letters. The judge ruled, you know, that she basically stated she published a false statement of material fact with knowledge or reckless disregard that it was false. The judge concluded he basically knew she was putting false statements on TV.
In fact, the court said, and I'll quote it, that Salinas declined to change course and continued running the advertisement. And they say in reckless disregard, the statements in the advertisement were false. And the court concluded, quote, the Salinas committee published a false statement of material fact with knowledge or reckless disregard that it was false. Let me ask you, Mike, should she have to give up her seat in Congress?
Well, anybody who blatantly, knowingly lies, Oregon law is pretty clear. If you make these kind of false statements, there's laws in Oregon that, well, the judge can decide as we finish up our trials. You know, we're in the appellate court stage. She appealed this. As we go through the trials coming up here, if the judge sees that, you know, what we're showing when it comes to the polling, that was a very close election. If just 1.2% of her voters voted for me, we would have won the election.
And the polls showed that 4 to 6% would have done it, or it read one way, almost five times as many voters would have voted differently as you needed to actually win the race had she not lied about and made false statements about you being charged with a crime.
Correct.
So where do we go from here? I mean, I know I'm going to ask my executive producer. I'll make the call myself as well, but I'd like to make sure that Salinas has a chance to respond to this. I'd love to get a chance to ask her, and I think other reporters should ask her the question. You know, it was shown in the court record that you lied. You lied after you were put on notice that what you were saying in the ads was a lie. It appears to have made a difference in the outcome of the election. Will you recant those lies? And if you now admit that they were lies and you were put on notice they were lies when you said them as a candidate, should you give up your seat? Now, I may be the only reporter out there who's actually asking the candidate, will you correct this injustice? And I'm willing to bet she won't call me back. Her campaign won't call me back. But, Mike, I wish you luck and have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and remember those who actually died to make sure that we would have these freedoms, the freedoms to vote, the freedoms to run for office, and not the freedom to lie about other people in a political campaign and win a seat in Congress. We will make that communication clear to Andrea Salinas and ask her, would you like to come on and respond? Or are you a liar who's afraid to face those lies? You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, heading into a Memorial Day weekend. And just remember, the purpose of that holiday is not barbecues. It's not family trips, although those are fun as well. It's to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice to preserve our freedoms in this country. I want to talk about forests. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that I'm in favor of taking America's public forests, federal and state, and harvesting them sensibly on a sustained yield basis so you can harvest the same number of trees every year for forever, in effect, because you plant the trees as fast as you cut them down, and the end result is that you never run out of trees. You provide jobs, you provide tax revenue, and everything else. I've invited Jennifer Hammaker on, who's president of Oregon Natural Resources Industries. Jennifer, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thank you so much.
So we have something called the Habitat Conservation Plan. Is that going to do any good for the forests, and is it going to do any good for the communities that are in those forests in the Northwest?
No, it's really going to impact us, you know, economically and environmentally. Forests burn predictably when they are not managed. And basically, this Habitat Conservation Plan that has been drummed up by seven people appointed by Kate Brown. Extreme policy that lasts for 70 years, and it abandons 53% of our state forests. So it definitely has a huge impact on our environment and our economics.
Now, I want you to explain how it abandons 53% of the state forest, because people are going to say, but it's the habitat conservation plan for the whole state. How does it abandon those forests?
Well, inside of the habitat conservation plan are habitat conservation areas and riparian conservation areas, both of which will be shut down to forest management, allowing fuel loads to increase and build over 70 years.
So the forest will sit there, and where you could go in and sensibly log parts of it, replant it, have brand new forest growing, clear out the fuel load by piling it up and either recycling it. I mean, you can grind it up into chipped wood, or you can burn it, one or the other. That won't happen in those areas for three quarters of a century?
That is correct. Yep. So, yeah, you can take that biomass, the biomass off of the land after you've harvested, and use it for energy. And it's green energy with 100%, evolution. So you could take that, the scraps off of that land, get it to a, what they call a cogeneration plant or that produces energy. You put it into a boiler, that boiler burns it. It turns a turbine producing electricity. And then the byproduct of that is ash. So you take that ash, you give it back to the farmers, they till it back into their fields, and it's 100% sustainable green energy. So that will not be happening on 53% of our state lands.
I mean,
if this HCP passes.
Jennifer, for all the greenies out there who are worried about carbon, when you take carbon from a tree, you burn it, the CO2 goes back in the air, the forests eat it back up again, turn it into more wood. It's a cycle. You never create any more carbon. You never get rid of the carbon, because you don't destroy matter. I think I remember that from physics class, that you can't destroy matter. You can change its form. But really, it's a cycle you could go on with forever. And all that, in fact, in some ways, it's solar power. Because all those trees grew with energy from the sun, turning the carbon into a form we could burn, and you burn it, and then you get more sun and more trees and make more fuel. You could do that forever, couldn't you?
I see that you've been paying attention. That is exactly right.
That's right.
That's right. And then also with lumber, so you harvest these trees, you bring them to a mill, you mill them, you turn them into lumber. That lumber, the half of the weight of dried lumber is carbon. So you're locking that carbon up for as long as that lumber, doesn't burn, or those trees don't burn. That's exactly what you're doing.
So if you build a house and you build it well to modern standards, and you figure it might last 100, maybe a couple hundred years, depending on how well you take care of it, all that carbon's locked up for a century. Much better than just letting the trees stand there. Jennifer, I know you're coming. I'm talking to Jennifer Hammaker, who is president of the Oregon Natural Resources Industries Group. What's the argument that persuaded these seven people to do this, to say, let's do nothing about 53% of the state forest for 70 years, and that's a good idea? Do you have any idea of why they went that direction?
Well, the thing is that Kate Brown gave them a directive to place more conservation on our forest. So it's not only just the 70-year policy that they're about to pass, which is something that we need to talk about, but it's also the forest management plan that they're creating that aligns with this HCP. So the forest management plan, it's on all state forests, and they're aligning it with this HCP. So what we're talking about right now is 53% of our forests being shut down to management or active engagement. And but the forest management plan, which is coming up, on its heels, will align itself furthering the close down of more acres on our timberland, on our state timberland.
Well, and Jennifer, is it a bit of a lie to say it's a conservation plan when you're telling me they're setting these forests up, over 50% of the forests, to just burn up, which doesn't sound very conservative at all?
No. So to me, it's a preservation plan. It's preserving the forest, not conserving the forest. And actually, it's predictable that they will burn. So we're just, you know, what they're doing is perpetuating the same results over and over and over again. You're going to close down forests. You're going to let the fuel loads build up. You're not going to manage them. And then inevitably, the very species that this habitat conservation plan is supposed to be protecting, well, they go up in smoke too. And it's sad, perpetual results.
By the way, the Oregon Natural Resources Industries Board is a volunteer board dedicated to trying to stop this habitat conservation plan. Jennifer, has anybody put a number to this saying how much Oregonians, since these are state forests, if you cut the timber and you get a severance tax for that, if you generate jobs and all that, has anybody calculated how much the economic cost of this habitat conservation plan that isn't really a conservation plan, how much it's going to cost everybody?
Well, so inside of the HCP, the Habitat Conservation Plan, they have to come up with an EIS, which is an environmental impact statement. Inside of that is the socioeconomic impacts in there. But just to go so that it's easier to understand, Tillamook County gets about $20 million a year on average of timber harvest revenue. Clatsop County gets $23 million a year average. These are direct dollars to these counties and the taxing districts within these counties. If they lose that money, it impacts schools. The taxing districts like Jewell and Alsea and Vernonia, they will lose half of their funding for their schools. Therefore, they're going to have to pivot or close down. You know, we're talking about law enforcement, rural fire departments inside of cities. We're talking... just across the board, if you could imagine what rural counties depend on, all of the different, social government things that they provide, all that's going to be gone away. It'll be defunded. And so we really want to stop this HCP and get the Board of Forestry to pivot on this, because their projections, their modeling, and that's how they came up with the projections, is, you know, you put garbage numbers into this modeling, you get garbage numbers out.
Yep.
There's inaccuracies in this HCP.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've let people know about it, Jennifer. I'm up against a break, but I really wish, I'm glad that you're doing this. And we haven't even counted the jobs that are lost, the income that's lost, and all those things. That's Jennifer Hammaker, who is president of the Oregon Natural Resource Industries. Jennifer, thanks very much. Coming up on this First Amendment Friday, here's an idea some Oregonians would love. Not a good one. Suicide for the homeless. We'll talk about that coming up next on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, heading into Memorial Day weekend. I'm glad to be with you, and I'm glad to take your calls, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll today: if a candidate tells a big lie and gets elected on the basis of that big lie and knows that she is lying when she tells the lie because she's put on notice by the local district attorney, should she give up her seat in Congress? I'm talking about Andrea Salinas. We've already put out the invitation to Congresswoman Salinas, asking her or perhaps even a member of her staff to come on the show and explain, why did you keep telling the lie when you were put on notice by somebody uninvolved in the campaign? That would be the district attorney of Hood River County, who said, hey, this guy was never charged with a crime. The crime that Mike Erickson was accused of by Andrea Salinas, but by nobody else, not by the DA, not by a grand jury, not by a court, but she accused Mike Erickson of being up on hard drug possession charges, and it simply wasn't true. And the DA told her, you're telling things in your campaign ads that are not true. And as Mike Erickson told us himself, they did polling after the campaign and said, how many of you voted for this person, that person? How many of you changed your vote because of the drug charges you heard about? It was 4 to 6% of the vote that was changed. Erickson lost by 1.2% of the vote. So in that case, should voters have an expectation that Congresswoman Andrea Salinas would forfeit her seat because she won the seat based on a lie? I think that would be a reasonable thing to do. In any case, 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Now, about that question that we were asking, I got a number of responses. Dave wrote in, Lars, but the Democrats are only expected to give up their seats if they don't lie, signed Dave. And Deeren writes in, Lars, I was just listening to the segment of the show about the Democrat congresswoman lying. There go the Democrats again with their double standards, smearing Republican Santos for lying while trying to excuse her. If they really wanted to follow the rules, there'd hardly be anybody left in office. He who is without sin cast the first stone. And then, of course, Dan Alger writes in and says, Lars, whether or not you're a liar or lied to get your office, it'd be a great question to ask of Gluzenkamp Perez. That's Marie Gluzenkamp Perez, who also lied during her campaign, although we don't have the kind of evidence that we have in the case of Mike Erickson. Now, I also got an email from a gentleman who really wondered when I, right before the break, said I was going to talk about suicide being one of the possible solutions to the problem of homelessness. Brian writes in, Lars, oh my God. I've not heard what you had to say about it yet, but I heard your blurb before the commercials. Suicide for the homeless? Why did I suddenly have images of World War II Jews in camps being forced into the shower chambers? Well, let me tell you the story I'm talking about. So far, it's only made it to our neighbor to the north, and that would be Canada. But what's happening in Canada? Canada has now legalized doctor-assisted suicide, or medical aid in dying, as they call it. But it's the same thing that Oregon actually was the first government on planet Earth to legalize in a formal way a doctor-assisted suicide. So they've been doing some surveys to say, well, what should you commit suicide for with the assistance of the state? Most of the time people say a person in intractable pain who's got a life-threatening or a life-terminating illness, that person should be able to commit suicide with the assistance of the state. Here's what the National Post out of Canada reports. One-third of Canadians are fine with prescribing assisted suicide for homelessness. Roughly the same number told a poll that they were fine with approving medical aid in dying for somebody whose only affliction is poverty. One-third of Canadians are fine with prescribing assisted suicide for no reason other than the fact that the patient is either poor or homeless or both. The results came in a research company poll probing how comfortable Canadians were with the current state of doctor-assisted suicide, or as they call it, MAID. Starting in March 2 years ago, Canada became one of only a handful of countries to legalize assisted suicide, even in instances where a patient does not have a terminal illness. Think about that for a moment. Ever since, a Canadian can be approved for medical aid in dying simply for having, quote, a grievous and irremediable medical condition. In other words, you've got an illness. It's not going to kill you anytime soon, but it's a bad illness and you can't fix it. 73% of people in Canada favor the current regime. Only 16% are opposed to it. And they say 20% of respondents are fine with doctor-assisted suicide for anybody for any reason whatsoever. Notably, those most absolute supporters of assisted suicide were pretty evenly distributed among the age groups, 20% conservative, 20% NDPers in Canada, and 22% liberals are in the always be allowed camp. It just floors me that people would want the state to be in that position. Let's go to Russ. Hey, Russ, we're close to the break, but time for a comment from you. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Hey, I was wanting to comment about your affordable housing piece that you did, you know, the 750 plus or whatever.
Dollars
per square foot. Yeah. So isn't there also a cost factor about a lot of that affordable housing go to people with Section 8? I don't know whether that still exists, but that's also...
Yes, it does. Yes, Section 8 is where the person who lives in the apartment only pays one-third of whatever they make. So if they make $300 a month, even if they're staying in a $1,000 a month apartment, they pay $100 in rent because they can only be made to pay one-third of whatever income they earn. You're absolutely right. And you've got the Lars Larson Show. Do you have investment properties you're considering selling and would like to learn how to defer the tax consequences? Then you need to call Equity Advantage and learn about a 1031 exchange. A 1031 exchange is a powerful investment tool. It enables you to keep a property's equity intact when it's used to acquire like-kind replacement property of equal or greater value and equity, even if you recently acquired the property. For over 30 years, Equity Advantage has been providing investors solutions for deferring taxes and maximizing the value of investments through a 1031 exchange. At Equity Advantage, we don't sell investments, but rather provide the tax deferment tools and expertise to facilitate their sale and transfer. Learn more by going to 1031exchange.com or Google YouTube Equity Advantage for in-depth videos. Listen, you've worked hard for the money in your investments. Equity Advantage works hard to keep it yours.
Learn more about 1031 exchanges and Equity Advantage at 1031exchange.com. That's 1031exchange.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's great to be with you on First Amendment Friday. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails in a moment. Now, you would imagine that a guy who every week celebrates First Amendment Friday would be very much in favor of free speech, and I am. I enjoy my free speech, and I want everybody else to get the same privilege. I also understand how social media puts an awful lot of that at risk, because in social media, there are other actors that can take control of your free speech, even through places like Twitter and Facebook and the rest. We've seen how the FBI has seized control of parts of that. And then you've got Communist China, which has TikTok. I don't have TikTok. I never have had TikTok on a device. I don't want to be around TikTok. I think that it is a spying device. But I've always argued that there ought to be a way for the marketplace to actually solve that problem. That when all the social media is either agreeing to silence political free speech, that the media owner, you know, the owners of Facebook and other social media disagree with, I don't want to be silenced. And at the same time, I've argued, well, maybe the marketplace will come up with something different. With that in mind, I want to talk to Nick Jenneke, who is director of media relations for a brand new social media platform called Ganjing World. And again, that sounds Chinese, sounds Asian. Anyway, Nick, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
So you kind of got a short primer on where I stand in all of this. I don't like TikTok. I think it is a spy device. It is. It reports information back to the Communist Chinese government, which I don't like. And I wouldn't like it if American social media reported back to the U.S. government to say, hey, we're going to tell you everything we know about Lars and Nick and everybody else. How is Ganjing World different? And in fact, you might talk about there is a tie to Falun Gong, isn't it? Isn't there?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, I would start off saying it's the Chappelle quote, right? So Dave Chappelle, the First Amendment is first for a reason. The second is there in case the first doesn't work out. So I just wanted to bridge the gap there a little bit. But yeah, so this is a platform that was created by Chinese Americans, not by a company in China. And I think that distinction is really, really important. Because it has a Chinese name, people associate it with China. And so I think it's really important to understand that the Chinese culture and Chinese Americans don't necessarily have anything to do with the Chinese government. And this was a company started by, to your point, people that were undergoing persecution in China. Some of the founders escaped persecution from China because of their religious belief and, you know, decided, hey, there really needs to be a better way. A platform that's basically G-rated, it's family-friendly. So as you know, the rating system, there's R, there's PG-13, and there's G. And G basically means there's no violence, there's nothing harmful, there's nothing erotic, and there's no criminal activity. And so it was started with that in mind.
See, it sounds great. And in fact, in a lot of ways, Falun Gong has a position that is antithetical to the current regime that runs the dictatorship that we call the PROC, doesn't it?
Well, right. So, I mean, that's right. So some of this is what is apparent harm, right? So I think in a lot of social media, harmful is being used as a very vague category for censorship, yep. Your exact point. So the idea here is, okay, can we have a platform that's family friendly? And I have to say our mission clears up how the algorithm works. So I always get a question about how does the algorithm work in detail? Well, that's proprietary. But I will say that the whole idea with Ganjing World is Ganjing means clean, and the mission is to basically through technology, and empower people through technology to rediscover traditional values and divine culture in daily life. So that's essentially the starting point of the entire platform.
And by the way, Nick, I always tell my audience, if I have a dog in the fight, I'll disclose it. I don't get any money from Ganjing World. I don't do any ads for you. I'm not involved at all. So I just find ideas I like. And the ideas I like, I'll tell my audience about because maybe they'll like them as well. But the thing I like especially is the way you describe that. Founded by a group of people who had left a place to escape religious persecution. Let's see. It sounds an awful lot like the folks who founded the United States of America and said, we're going to write a constitution that says anybody can have any faith they want or no faith at all, even though all of them were Christians. But they said, we don't want to see religious persecution. Those are the folks who founded the United States. So having that kind of philosophy going into it sounds like a very clean philosophy. What else should people know about Ganjing World?
Yeah, I think for me, the key is that it is family friendly, right? So this is a safe place where kids can go. They're not going to be indoctrinated with harmful ideology, violent content, right? So there's a bill in Montana. There's a couple more bills coming out regarding children in social media. And, you know, it's gone so far as to say, should 13-year-olds or children under the age of 13 even have any access to social media, YouTube, so on and so forth. So what I want people to know is there is a personal responsibility in the age of algorithms and the age of artificial intelligence that we as humans have to take. And it's kind of what I'm calling the birds and the bees discussion that you need to have with your children when they're using technology. Because not only can the content be damaging, but the very aspect or the very use of technology intrinsically can also be addictive. So what's the difference between red dye, sugar, fast food, negative drugs, and technology, right? In many cases, technology has been built as a manipulation tool that hijacks your dopamine response in order to, basically make you watch more videos of the same thing. So if you're a parent with a child and your child's going onto social media, let's say they just turned 13, I would sit them down and have a very clear conversation on what is your intent for using this platform. If you're looking to be a nurse or you want a nursing degree, maybe ignore the things that don't comply with that, because the more you pay attention to things on social media, the more the algorithm is going to be used towards that. But if you're actually looking at things that are on your purpose, the algorithm is going to reinforce that as well. So it really is important as human beings that we're giving feedback to the algorithm as we use it, and people need to have that understanding.
See, and I'm with you that there ought to be parental responsibility, but I also say that if you say, well, my parents have told me not to go here, problem is they're tempting things for kids, and we all know about them. If you ask my dad, who's now passed away, but if you said, has Lars ever had access to beer at age 16 or 17, he'd say, well, I didn't give him any beer, and I told him to stay away from it, but I did. I did have access to beer at 16 or 17, and most of the time I chose not to do it. The social media is that on steroids, because you could say, well, I told my kids to stay away from the sketchy websites. Well, yeah, we all understand kids are tempted, and sometimes they don't have the maturity to make proper choices. Check it out. It's Ganjing, G-A-N-J-I-N-G World. I've got no dog in the fight or bias one way or the other, other than I like the idea that with all this talk about restricting age with locking TikTok out altogether, which I'm not necessarily against, having one that actually bills itself as a clean world, no eroticism, no violence, no criminal or harmful content, sounds like a darn good idea. Nick, thanks so much for the time, and I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Lars.
That's Nick Jenneke, Director of Media Relations for the brand new social media platform, Ganjing World. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I've got a lot to talk about today. It's a First Amendment Friday heading into Memorial Day weekend. I'd merely remind you one more time, the purpose of the weekend, yes, it's fun to have barbecues and visit with friends, but the purpose is to remember those who've made the ultimate sacrifice in uniform in defense of this country. Please remember that. But since it is First Amendment Friday, let's get back to your calls. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every weekday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I was just curious about the double standard for George Santos, House of Representatives. I haven't heard any single Republican come out and say he should be resigning from office and he's going to have his day in court, yes, but it's the same thing you're talking about with the Twitter poll today.
So you don't listen to the show very often, because all of last fall I was saying Santos sounds like a bad character, he should resign. He's lied to get into his office. You heard me say it. Now, I'm still a registered Republican, although I always say I'm a conservative first, because too many Republicans are not conservative. But you've heard me say it, and I've seen other conservatives and Republicans say it as well. I don't set a double standard. I've always told people, if you break the rules, then you get the same consequence. And whether you're on my side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle, I don't hold up different rules for, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and George Santos. I think both of them are kind of a waste of oxygen. But Santos, I called for him to leave office last fall, when it became clear that he had lied to the voters. So there may be a double standard in some quarters, and you may see some elected officials say, we're not going, some members of Congress. But those folks are so, well, what word should I use that you could use on the radio? They are gutless in that they won't hold Mayorkas to account. They won't hold Biden to account. But you've never heard me defend George Santos. It seemed even early on we were seeing indications. This is a guy who regularly and routinely lies about who he is, what he's all about all of the things that he did to get into office. And I won't be in favor of seeing him reelected. On the other hand, I'm not in his congressional district, and who knows what his voters will do. I don't think they'll reelect him, but do you?
Nope, fair enough.
Okay, and that's all I'm saying is that, we don't often get a case like Congresswoman Andrea Salinas, who lied during the campaign, and then this happens so rarely, her lies are really definable lies. I mean, if you say, I'm the better candidate, or I've done the right thing, or, those are general statements. When you say, my opponent has been charged with possessing illegal drugs, that's one where you can test the truth or falsity of that statement, right? So she gets called out on the lie a month before the election and is told by an uninterested person not involved in the campaign, those statements are false. They are demonstrably false. They've never been true. They weren't even true for a while. And she says, that's okay, and keeps on running the commercial, lying about her opponent. In a case like that, should she have to give up her seat?
Yes.
I would agree with you. And I'm not for double standards either, David, or Chris. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to David. David, you want to talk education? What about education?
Hi, Lars. How's it going today?
It's going very well for a First Amendment Friday heading into a Memorial Day weekend.
Well, I'm a very frustrated parent. My wife emailed you last week or the week before, having some problems. Been going through some problems with the indoctrination of our children. I'm a stepfather. I've been trying to keep my mouth closed about this, but I feel that it is my responsibility at least to notify other parents the information. It's my responsibility. So yesterday, you had many parents come online and talk about charter schools and how good they are. Well, I want to beware other parents that they are not cracked up. They are not all what they are cracked up to be. They will lie, they will hide, and they will indoctrinate your children as well. I have proof. I have the dog in a fight.
Okay, I'd be glad to see what I'd be glad to see your proof. But can I tell you one absolute superiority of charter education over public schools? Okay, and I can prove it to you. And it's on the very subject you're talking about. If you move into a neighborhood where only K-12 education is provided only by government schools, and you're told if you live at this address, your kids go to that school. And if you say, well, what other choices do I have? And they say, you don't have any other choices in education provided by government. That allows that kind of indoctrination to continue. With a charter school,
I absolutely agree.
With a charter school, number one, you have some choice. So you can say you may have two choices, three choices, four, five, six choices, or just two. But at least with two, you've got some choice. Number two, if the charter school does not perform well enough to have parents and their kids stay in the school, the charter school goes away. If it doesn't stand up to what it promised in its charter, it goes away. Have you ever seen a government-run public K through 12 school go out of business?
Well, no, of course not. But
no, but charter schools do all the time.
Right. Now, here out in Bend, Oregon, and in Redmond, my wife had the idea of pulling her children out of public school, putting them into a charter school.
Right.
Redmond Proficiency Academy is not what is cracked up to be.
Then move.
Now,
then move to a different school.
Yep, I would agree. Now, unfortunately, it is too late. My wife emailed.
Too late for what? Next fall is months away. The current school year is almost over. You've got time to make a choice about moving to a different school, and at least you have choice given charters. With government schools, you have no choice.
Unfortunately, our daughters are brainwashed and now convinced that they are supposed to be boys.
And that's that is a problem for the parents. I would suggest even a lawsuit. Because I'm not a big fan of lawsuits, but David, if you tell me my child was led to a gender change by being indoctrinated by the people at a government agency, it isn't often that government agencies can be sued successfully, but it does happen. And if you say,
including
my child was led astray,
their counselor.
I understand what you're saying. Well, then
right.
Will you take the actions necessary to straighten that up?
Well, we were trying to, and we were hoping to get information from you, hoping that maybe you can direct us.
And all you've got to do, David, is send me a note. I'm not a lawyer, but we are in contact with a bunch of different organizations that go to bat for people on educational issues and on legalish civil rights issues. So if you say my child's civil rights have been violated, a government employee caused them to go out and make changes in their life. Now, you're going to fight against the counselors who are going to say, no, the child wanted to make the choice. Well, there are children right. who want to make all kinds of choices. I mean, there are kids who say, hey, Dad, I'd like to drive the family truck at age 12. And my granddaughter, who's 7, would love to drive my car down the public roads. I say, you cannot drive on the public roads. We will not let you. The law will not let you. But if you can make the case. But all you got to do is email me. I will put you in touch with those organizations. They'll look at it, and they'll make a decision about whether or not you have a solid legal case. And there are a lot of organizations that do that, and they have very conservative values. David, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. It's First Amendment Friday heading into Memorial Day weekend, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your calls, especially on a First Amendment Friday heading into Memorial Day weekend. Remember the reason that we celebrate Memorial Day. I guess we could say mark Memorial Day, but if you say there's a reason to celebrate because people have put on a uniform, done American service, put their lives in harm's way to defend our freedoms, I think that is something worthy of celebration, as long as you don't just make it barbecues and get-togethers over a long weekend. Carl Szabo joins me now, who's vice president of NetChoice, which is a trade association of businesses focused on, you know, free speech and enterprise online. Carl, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
I want to ask you a question because I've been a little leery of ChatGPT and other AI type devices like that, even though I'm really enthusiastic about technology, because it seems as though it promises all kinds of great things that it might help us do. But at the same time, it might be really dangerous as well.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to anything new, there's always that fear factor. You know, when cars first came on the road, they actually required people to walk in front of them
with a flag
to warn
and at night
people,
with a lantern.
there was a car coming. And once again, we laughed back at that. time, it's been the same thing true with ChatGPT and OpenAI and large language models. There's incredible opportunity with AI, but there's also a lot of fear that's going on, and some of that fear comes from uncertainty and unknowing what AI can do. And at the end of the day, AI basically just looks at a bunch of stuff and picks out what it thinks will be the best answer. And a simple example of that, that AI has been used in, is cancer research. So when it comes to things like a breast exam, AI can look at millions of mammograms and begin identifying precancerous identifiers better than doctor can. That's just because it can.
You know what, Carl? I'm gonna have producer Donovan check that line because his connection. I don't think it's the CIA or the FBI trying to get in the way of our communication or our call. But it's getting sketchy, and I want people to hear exactly what Carl Szabo has to say. And at this point, it's a little bit difficult to do that. So I thought we'll check the line and make sure it's working. And I understand the point he's making about cancer. In fact, I've cited the same stories that I've seen where doctors are saying, if you go to the clinic, they take an X-ray, they do a mammogram, and the human eyeball looks at it and says, I don't see a problem. But the computer looks at it and looks at it differently and says, no, we can actually detect the beginnings of a problem. They might be able to, I've seen some predictions saying you might be able to detect breast cancer or predict it years earlier. That's the bottom line, isn't it, Carl?
Yeah, exactly. And there are tons of other use cases, like when it comes to driverless cars, or just, frankly, helping to make boring tasks obsolete. And one last example is I was talking to my law students, and they were asking, hey, for our paper, can we use AI? And I told them, look, if you just use AI, you're probably going to get a C, because it's going to create some boring content, and I can kind of spot that. But what it can do is if you create a really good outline, it can kind of help insert those transition sentences. And that's kind of what we're talking about at the end of the day. There's great, incredible opportunity, but there is a lot of fear out there. And invariably, people always go to, you know, what about the Terminator? And if that's a concern we have, then let's outlaw the Terminator. We don't outlaw the technology. Just like how, you know, hammer. We don't outlaw hammers, but a hammer can be used to break a window or build a house. We outlaw the bad actions. We don't outlaw the tools or the technology.
Well, Carl, I'm not as worried about Skynet, although I guess maybe we should be. But you know what I'm worried about? I mean, I'm at the age where I'm not out applying for jobs all the time or ever because I like my current job and I plan to stay here for a long, long time. But here's what I think about. A young man or woman walks in, applies for a job, and ordinarily they'd see a human being, and the human being and other human beings would decide this person is the right fit out of 50 candidates. And they might be their great fit. They might turn out to be a disaster. With AI, what I worry about is people will begin to trust it. And the company will say, let's submit all the applications to the AI. Because in theory, just like the mammogram, the AI can spot little teeny differences in candidates that the human being would not have. So they will say this is a more accurate way to choose employees. And so some employee who might have been a perfectly great candidate gets shut out because the AI tells the humans, don't choose Carl. Don't put Carl in that job. He won't be good. And even if they say, well, why? The AI will say, the whole collection of millions of pieces of data that you miserable humans with your gray matter can't possibly see what I'm seeing, but I'm telling you, Carl is not the right choice. And at that point, you lose out on the job, Carl. And because the humans will say, well, we got to trust the AI. It knows more than we do. It can see more than we do. I worry about that. How do we resolve that?
Yeah, and that's a serious concern. So first of all, you have, what is a violation of, or you engage in unlawful discrimination. That is unlawful today, regardless of whether you use a machine to do it or whether you do it just by looking at a person. So people will not be able to hide behind machines that make decisions that violate existing law. But with respect to the machine itself, this is where the free market really comes into play, because if I, as an employer, am using a system to decide who to hire, and that system is not giving me the best candidates,
yep,
I'm going to go use a different system. And in fact, what you'll see is competitors will show that one system is better than the other, or here's a blind spot in my competitor's system. So that's actually how we avoid these problems, is the free market will actually solve it for us, because if you create a new system that does it better than the other guy, you're going to let everyone know about the failures of that old system. And that's how we solve and address that problem. But once again, that's the free market, not government, not anyone coming in and trying to create rules or regulations. Because what we have seen so far is, for example, the Biden administration just announced last week that they want to inject diversity, equity, and inclusion into AI.
God.
Horrible idea. Because the wonderful thing about AI is it can actually help eliminate those natural predilections that we have as a human being and just make it all about the data, the facts, the information, and whether that person is or is not a good candidate, regardless of their race, creed, or color.
See, and that's the second concern I've got, because you just identified it. We were told by the folks at Twitter before Musk, we're told by the folks at Facebook, why we have an algorithm that just looks at everybody's content and it doesn't screen out conservatives and allow liberals to say anything they want. And yet we've seen good examples of that, where the Palestinian Authority still has a presence on Facebook, but some conservative who opposes abortion gets shut out. And you say, hold on, your algorithm doesn't look as though it's balanced. And you say, well, no, we've made it so it's completely colorblind and all the rest of that. Except that how will we be able to call out the AI? Say, you've designed an AI, and the way you've programmed it, it seems biased against conservatives and for liberals. I hope that we're even able to see those biases. I mean, we certainly saw it in social media. There seemed to be a pattern there. And of course, what we got back from Musk and the rest of that bunch was, not Musk so much, but Zuckerberg and others, was, oh no, we're not biased at all. We're just screening out the crazies. And all the crazies just happen to be conservative. I mean, and that's the concern I've got. Carl, I appreciate what you do. And thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That is Carl Szabo, the vice president of NetChoice Trade Association for businesses focused on free speech and enterprise online. It is First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS, and we'll get to those next at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll today. If a candidate tells a big lie and gets elected on the basis of that lie, and she knew at the time she was saying it that she was lying, and she had been put on notice by somebody not involved with either one of the campaigns. In this case, Andrea Salinas, now member of Congress, got into her seat by beating Mike Erickson. Now, Mike Erickson's the conservative. I favor him, so I'm not hiding my bias there. But she said that he had been charged with possession of hard drugs by the Hood River County DA's office. And the Hood River County DA's office called her campaign and said, that is not true. You are telling people a lie. In that case, should she keep her seat in Congress or give it up? We have given an offer to Congresswoman Salinas to come on the program and explain what she had to say and why she kept on lying. I don't know whether or not she'll take it. I'm not going to hold my breath. In the meantime, let's go to a different Andrea who's calling in, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. This isn't Andrea Salinas, is it, Andrea? Andrea?
Hey, Lars. Yeah. Hi, Lars. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. What's on your mind today?
I was just wondering, with the rules around the all the gender changes for minors,
yeah,
and the safe havens from their parents, my question is, who is being held responsible for the medical bills?
In that case, I think the straight answer is the parents are still on the hook to pay, which is largely, I mean, for example, if right now, even without this House Bill 2002, if somebody's daughter gets pregnant and then goes to the school counselor or a teacher or a social worker and says, hey, I'm pregnant, I want to obtain an abortion, and they help her obtain an abortion, I guarantee you, if she's on her parents' medical plan, and she almost certainly is, whether it's Medicaid or private insurance from a job, mom and dad are going to get the bill. And it may even be I mean, if they get a bill for a couple of $1,000 for an abortion, they're going to say to her, what is this bill for? And unfortunately, right now, children are allowed to say, it's none of your damn business, mom and dad. I don't have to tell you. Now, most kids won't, but some kids would. And in fact, I can't count the number of parents who've told me why I went to the doctor with my daughter. She went in and see a doctor, and the doctor came out, and I said, so how's she doing? What's wrong, and how do we fix it? And the doctor says, I can't tell you unless she gives me permission to tell you. That's how outrageous we're already, the position we're in already. With House Bill 2002, your daughter could seek an abortion at age 10. You're paying the bill. The state and everybody else keeps the secret from you, and you have no control. Your son says, I want to be chemically castrated with puberty blockers, and that is the effect puberty blockers would have on a young man who says he wants to be a girl. Don't have to tell the parents or ask them. And a young lady can bear a child, alive or dead, and then bury the child in the backyard, and it will no longer be a crime under House Bill 2002. And if people think I'm being too blunt to say it that way, I don't want people to hear the unblunt version, the euphemistic version. She would conceal the effect of her pregnancy. I want people to know the ugly stuff that, unfortunately, the Democrat Party seems to just love.
Right. And I agree 100% with you. And on top of that, I just want to say there's not enough gratitude to go around for our veterans.
Absolutely right. Andrea, thank you very much. She is absolutely right about that. Let's go to Josh in Longview. Hey, Josh, welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
So I want to express my frustration that I have with TriMet, specifically the MAC line.
Okay.
I got on over at the Moda Center traveling eastbound on the blue line. The ticker teller didn't coincide with the stops that were being announced where we were at. They're letting transients take over every stop that you're at. Drug users just get to hang out. The 42nd Hollywood elevator doesn't even work, so disabled people can't even use it. They have to travel up those stairs. They really have a problem they need to remedy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Josh, you've picked, if you listen to the show, you know TriMet is one of my favorite hobby horses. The agency is just completely, not the individual drivers, but the agency is run terribly. And what's really ugly about it is they just decided to raise the fares. Now, I'm not against charging people more to ride on public transit. It is a smoking good.
Not going to stop the free riders.
No, it won't. And they won't do fare enforcement. They're raising the fare. They have declining ridership for the last couple of decades, not just the pandemic. And they're constantly saying, we have to have more money. We have to cut back service. So imagine any private company that said, hey, Josh, we love you coming here, but we're going to give you less of what you came here for. You're going to pay more. Would you tolerate that from any private institution?
Attempt to call their customer service. You can't even get a hold of anybody.
Nope.
I'll never ride mass transit again anywhere in the Portland metro area, which is sad because I used to use it on a regular basis.
And the thing is, it's dangerous. I mean, the fact is people get attacked and assaulted at bus stops, at train stops, and everything else. Josh, I can't disagree with you one little bit. Let's go to Jared. Jared, we're close to the break, but there's time for your comment. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I'm a truck driver in Portland, Oregon here, and I just want to tell you, we got these camera systems in our truck that face forward, they face the driver, they're in the blind spots on the mirrors, and they're AI camera systems. These things are talking to us while we're driving, like a backseat driver. They're sending emails to our boss, and I get why they have them, but at the same time, like, do we have a reasonable sense of privacy in the workplace?
Actually, you don't. I mean, the blunt answer is, when you're in the workplace, you're in somebody else's space. And they can literally come and search your lockers, search your desk. If you've got your car parked on the company parking lot, they can search that. So, no, you don't have a reasonable expectation, except maybe in the bathroom. And who knows even there. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network, and we're glad to be with you. Always glad to take your phone calls and emails. Our Twitter poll today, if a candidate running for office tells a major league lie that gets her elected to public office, and she knows she's lying at the time she says it, she's put on notice by somebody not involved with her campaign or the other guy's campaign, and she keeps on lying anyway and telling the same lies even after she's been put on notice, and then you find out about it. And a court takes official recognition of the fact that Andrea Salinas lied about her opponent, about the fact that he'd been charged with possession of narcotic drugs, when in fact he had not. And when the DA told her, "You're lying, this is not true, we've never charged Mike Erickson," if a candidate tells that kind of big lie to get elected, and now she's called out, should she have to give up her seat? I would answer that one yes. You can find the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And Congresswoman Salinas has been invited to come on the program and explain why she kept on saying things that were not true and which polls showed would have changed the votes of 4 to 6% of the voters. That one lie. And Mike Erickson only lost by 1.2% of the vote. He would have been the member of Congress. Andrea Salinas would be doing something else. I'd love to hear her explanation. I kind of doubt we're going to get her on. But the guy we can get on most of the time is Joe Kent, retired Special Forces warrant officer and the Gold Star husband of fallen senior Navy chief Shannon Kent, who was murdered by ISIS. Joe, welcome back and congratulations on a major league endorsement.
Thank you very much, Lars. Great to be with you.
How about this endorsement from the Clark County GOP? Did you expect that one?
Yeah, actually, I was pleasantly surprised. I was really honored to receive the Clark County GOP's endorsement the night before. I was really honored to get Cowlitz County GOP's endorsement. And then just last night, Skamania County GOP endorsed me as well. So this just really shows the unity of the Republican Party. I know you and our listeners here, they all know the history. We had a hard-fought primary. Our primaries are jungle primaries, which makes them hard, and they don't get sorted out until August. So if we're going to beat an incumbent Democrat, then we have to have Republican unity, and we're already showing that the Republican Party in this district is unified. So I couldn't be more honored.
You know, these jungle primaries where they just have everybody run against everybody without regard to party labels, I think they're inherently unfair to the voters, and I'd love to get a change. But that's not something you'd change at the congressional level. Oregon's going to try ranked choice voting, which I think is just as bad. And when and if they do that, I hope what they find is it doesn't work right, doesn't truly represent the people. And I appreciate your comments about that, because if the system doesn't represent the point of view of all of the voters, Democrats and Republicans, then you need to throw the system out and go back to the old way of doing it.
That's absolutely right, Lars. I mean, look, the Democrats were able to flip this seat because they saw that the Republicans, we had that hard-fought jungle primary. The Democrats, they shrewdly rallied around one candidate. They didn't expend resources. We had a bloodbath in the jungle primary. And so now we're showing that we understand how the game is played, and just wait until next year when they see how we figured out ballot harvesting. That's our next task that we have to take on in order to win within this horrible system before we can change the system.
Okay, so Joe is running to actually capture the seat that I think he should have won against Marie Gluzenkamp Perez. You've been keeping a close eye on her activities as a new member of Congress. Is she living up to the promises she made to the voters?
Absolutely not. I mean, she ran as a moderate Republican, essentially. And since she's gotten into office, she's voted in lockstep with the Democrats, whether it's preserving the 87,000 IRS agents that are targeting middle-class Americans, or if it's voting to let biological men into women's bathrooms, or if it's to stop parents from having transparency in what their kids are being taught in school. And then she's also going along with this absolutely insane debt ceiling negotiation, where the Democrats basically are refusing to negotiate. The Democrats refuse to put forward a budget. All they're saying is give us, you know, trillions of dollars and just raise the debt ceiling. It's completely irresponsible. And she is part and parcel of that, of driving our economy absolutely off the cliff.
You know what, Joe, and by the way, mention where people can help you out, both as volunteers and financially, because you don't run congressional candidacies or campaigns without a lot of money and a lot of help. So where can they help you out?
Absolutely. Please go to JoeKentForCongress.com to volunteer or donate. We're up against the might of the Democrats, so anything people can kick in really helps.
Okay, so tell me about this. You mentioned the debt ceiling. Just within the last 2 hours, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary under Biden, bad choice, but then again, most of his choices, I think I would say all of his choices have been bad, but she comes out and says, okay, the drop dead date is Monday, June the 5th. That's the day America defaults. Are we really going to go all the way to that point? And Joe Biden is just going to say, you know, in contrast to what he said as a senator and as a VP, that you have to negotiate on the debt ceiling when it comes to, raising it or not. And now all of a sudden, as president, he says he doesn't. Are we going to go over that financial cliff?
We're not, Lars. Absolutely not. The only way that we actually default, regardless of what the Democrats say, is if Yellen and Biden deliberately decide not to make payments. It's very basic. We take in nearly $5 trillion in tax revenue to pay off the interest that we owe. It costs about $930 billion. So we have the money. That's why everybody left D.C. for the long weekend, and everybody in the stock market hasn't crashed. Like, we have the money. This is all performative. The Democrats, they basically just want a blank check. They refuse to present any kind of model. The so-called problem solvers, Marie says she's a problem solver, they put forth a plan that said that they want to have a commission to study this issue, and they'd get back to us at the end of the next 2024 election. So then that would have us spending as Biden wants us to spend, which is adding probably $2 to $3 trillion more onto the national deficit, funding the weaponized IRS to go after individual taxpayers, and then also funding all this Green New Deal nonsense in the Inflation Reduction Act. Remember, the Republicans presented an actual plan. The Democrats have no plan but to continue the status quo of driving us to financial ruin.
And by the way, we've asked Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez to come on, and I would be asking her about some of those issues. She has never consented to an interview. I kind of expect that she never would, even though I'd be on my best behavior. But that debt, think about where we sit right now, $900 billion a year, in effect, to divide it out. That means every single day, America owes almost $3 billion a day, which translates to about $9 from every man, woman, and child per day just to pay the interest. So a family of four should think $36 a day is being paid just to pay the interest on what America owes. That's staggering.
It's insane. And they expect us to say, oh, okay, I agree with that, and to continue to give them the credit card. Whereas the Republicans have actually presented, Kevin McCarthy presented a very, I think, moderate, I think it should have been more drastic, but it was still a good plan to actually start to reduce our spending levels. And there's it, without touching any kind of entitlements, regardless of what the Democrats say, we're not touching Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. We're not touching the veterans benefits. We're paying all of our bills. We're just reining in discretionary spending. And that's where Biden continues to add up these trillion-dollar budgets and these trillion-dollar deficits. It's just complete insanity. It's not sustainable, and we actually have to have adults soberly assess this and present a budget to the American people, respect the people enough to show them where their taxpayer dollars are going.
Including all the monies that were shoveled out during the pandemic. Oh, this is emergency money. And then it wasn't spent. And so McCarthy and the Republicans said, well, then send the money back to the Treasury. And the Democrats are saying, no, they got it during the pandemic. The pandemic is over, but we want to let them keep all that money, even though the country is almost broke. That's Joe Kent. He's running for Congress again, this time successfully, to replace the not-so-moderate Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. We'll be back with your calls. It's First Amendment Friday, heading into Memorial Day weekend. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get to something and talk to you about it, but since it is First Amendment Friday, I want to be fair to the people who are listening. So if you want to join the session on a First Amendment Friday where everything is fair game, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go to the head of the line. So if you disagree with me, you're more than welcome. And our Twitter poll today, if a candidate tells a big lie to get elected and knows she's lying, should she have to give up her seat? We'll talk about that as well. And of course, you can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's go first to Victor. Hey, Victor, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, the
Victor?
United States House is the government of the United States. And the second is the news media, which is the propaganda machine for the wrongdoing that our government is doing to our nation.
Okay, now the first part of your call dropped out. You're saying the biggest concerns or the biggest enemies of the United States are the U.S. government and the mainstream media that backs up what they're saying. Did I get you right?
Yeah, yes, you got me. That's right.
Okay, I would tend to agree with you on both those. What do you do about it?
Well, we just have to, first of all, the people have to realize they're destroying the country, and I don't think we have on doing this. There has to be a big change in our government. We have to put people in that's going to bring our industry back and our jobs back and quit driving us into debt and quit. They want to go into a dictatorial total control of the individual, too, like the farmers, and they're putting all kinds of regulations on them. And I think this CO2 scam where they sell this CO2 tonnage, it's just a big hoax.
I agree.
Tax on everybody.
I agree. And Victor, they're going to use every one of those mechanisms. In fact, I was going to mention this later, that you know, an awful lot of the craziest ideas start in Western Europe, and then they come to the United States because the liberals in the United States just love almost everything that Western Europe does. So let me give you a practical example. The U.S. Constitution says you have a right to travel. Now, how you travel is not constitutionally protected, but if you said, I want to go from Los Angeles to New York, or I want to go from Florida all the way to North Dakota, the United States government cannot stop you from traveling. Now, whether you're able to fly or drive or walk or bicycle or ride a horseback or whatever is up to you. But your right to travel is a constitutional right. Let me give you an example of where France is doing this right now. And when I read about it, I thought this is exactly the kind of nonsense that I would expect from our government. So here's what the government of France has said. There are a number of places where you might travel from places in France, like Paris and Lyon and Bordeaux. I've never been there, so I don't know. But you might be able to travel by airplane, fast and convenient, or you might get on a train, and then it'll take a couple of hours to get there, but you still get there. Well, the bottom line is the government of France is now banning short-haul airline flights because they say this is about climate change. So when you say, well, I want to go from Paris to, I don't know, some other place in France or some other place in Europe that's only a couple of hours away on a train, the government of France is now telling people you're not allowed to take the airplane. You have to travel by a mass transit, in that case, rail. Well, I could easily imagine people saying, well, I want to travel from, say, Los Angeles to San Francisco. And you say, well, you can, you know, there's no train there, but there are buses and there are other means of getting there. Can you imagine the U.S. government telling the people in this country, you're not allowed to get there on an airplane? And we're doing that because we want to cut down on the amount of airplane travel, because airplane travel uses a lot of fuel and generates a lot of carbon. I agree with you. The carbon thing is a hoax. It really is, because the primary driver of changes in the atmosphere is water vapor. It's not CO2. CO2 is what they call a trailing indicator, not a leading indicator. In other words, it's not carbon first warming happens. It's if it gets warmer, you will see more carbon dioxide out there because of a lot of different reasons that all go back to how the atmosphere and how the plant life on this planet works. But can you imagine the government telling you there are certain kinds of means of travel that should be available to you? They're available to other people, but you're not allowed to take a flight, because if you do that, it'll burn more fuel than if we make you go to the train station, get on the train, and take two or three times as much time to get where you want to go. That's the kind of nonsense that we're up against, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the FBI is so crooked that they did all kinds of evil things trying to down Trump. And then Biden and his son, which have done things which the FBI should be bringing out, they cover for them, and of course, yep. Same thing with the news media, and it's propaganda and lying, and all the people that want to save our nation, they're running down, and then vice versa on the other.
I couldn't agree with you more. Victor, thank you very much for the call. I want to mention something to you, and I'll tell you that I'm a former high school debater, okay? I only went to college for a year and a half, and I was busy enough at college that I didn't really have time to go do debate, although it was a lot of fun. And as you've noticed, I've carried that on into my work here, because I'll end up debating with naysayers and all that. But, you know, one of the things about high school debate or college debate that I always thought was great was you had to learn how to do good research. That was number one. Number two, you had to learn how to formulate a solid argument in favor of something or against something. Because when you're doing a high school or college debate, you have to argue for something in the first round. And then after you get past that round and you have another opponent, then you have to argue against it. And you flip each round so that one round is arguing in favor, one round is arguing against. It forces you to be able to see the other guy or other gal's point of view. But debate has apparently changed. And I want to cite this piece that I thought was just fascinating. The people who judge high school and college debate, the Free Press is reporting, the judges themselves are forcing woke policy on your kids. At high school debates, they headline it, debate is no longer allowed. Now imagine this. When you take a look at the people who are judging debates, because of social media and everything else, there are debate judges who say, this is my philosophy. For example, the 2019 national debate champion, her name is Lila Lavender, and she now judges high school debates. So good to have somebody in the room that's actually done it before. It'd be like having somebody be a referee for a ball game and they used to be a coach, so they know the game. In the case of debate, she writes this on social media. Before anything else, including being a debate judge, I am a Marxist, Leninist, Maoist. I cannot check the revolutionary proletarian science at the door when I'm judging debate. I will no longer evaluate. This is what she's telling to kids who are debating in front of her. I will no longer evaluate, and thus I will never vote for right side arguments, capitalist imperialist positions. Examples of these arguments are capitalism is good, imperialist war is good, neoliberalism is good, defense of the U.S. or other bourgeois nationalism, Zionism or normalizing Israel is good, U.S. fascist policing is good. In other words, she's already telling the debaters ahead of time, if you stray out of the political lane and you go up against my point of view, I won't evaluate you based on your debate skills. I'm going to evaluate you based on my personal beliefs and values. That's crazy. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a First Amendment Friday, heading into Memorial Day weekend. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Always naysayers go to the head of the line. And if you want to send an email instead, talk@LarsLarson.com. And, of course, you can vote in the Twitter poll. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and LarsLarson.com on the web. I wanted to bring on Adam Brandon, who is president and CEO of FreedomWorks. Adam, welcome back, and happy Memorial Day.
To you as well. It's a solemn and wonderful weekend, and it's just wonderful. I was driving around earlier today, and I started seeing all those flags popping up at cemeteries, and it reminds you this is a great country, and a lot of people have made a lot of sacrifice to get us where we are today.
You're absolutely right. And, Adam, I've had people say, well, celebrate Memorial Day. I said, well, if you have people who voluntarily, in most cases, put on a uniform, signed up for service, committed themselves 24/7, 365 for years, or in some cases decades, to put their lives in harm's way in defense of their own country, and they made the ultimate sacrifice, I think that is a reason to celebrate, not their passing, but the fact that they were willing to do that, and they did it for a great country. So I'm with you there. Let me ask you about this. What isn't realistic for me is the idea that Joe Biden is jamming some EPA goals down our throats at our own expense, and they don't seem to be realistic at all when you sit down and look at the math and the facts on the ground, are they?
Well, a couple of things happened in recent weeks, and I'm kind of stunned by this because I look at headlines, and yeah, it popped up here or there. But two things happened. Number one, the Biden administration, and now, mind you, this is not through law. This is not through voting in Congress and Senate where we can hold them responsible. These are unelected bureaucrats, basically have set the rules so that in about 10 years, the overwhelming majority of cars and trucks sold in the United States will have to be electric.
Yep.
And if you think about that, when I buy a car, I want it to go 7-8 years. So this may be the next car your listeners buy. And it's eight. If you want to go out and buy an electric car, great. Go buy an electric car. But telling me I can only buy an electric car, hold on a second. And telling the industry they can only make electric cars, and the electric cars only have about 20 moving parts, what does that mean for the voter who's manufacturing car parts in a place like Michigan and Ohio? And what does that mean for you to make sure when you buy that car, now you've got to spend $1,500, $2,500 for a charging station? It goes on and on. But what makes it crazier is it's not just that. It's that the EPA also is now saying in that same time frame, power plants are going to have to sequester about 90% of their carbon. Where are we going to get the electric for these cars? Like, that's just not feasible. Science isn't there yet. Maybe someday it will be. But if you start shutting off, you're just going to put all this demand on right now for all this electric for these cars, and the grid's already at almost at 100%.
Yep.
What does that mean? This is just not realistic.
And Adam, if we allowed, I mean, if the private marketplace over the next 50 years made electric cars popular and gasoline and diesel cars unpopular, I don't think it's capable of doing that yet because the numbers aren't there and the prices aren't there, you would have a slow transition. But they're talking about such a fast transition. And what I worry about is this. I've seen a couple of states, including the one I live in, that said, okay, as of 2030, let's say, or 2032, two-thirds of cars on lots for sale must be electric, and only one-third will be gas. Well, in that interim period, what you're going to see is car dealers do anything that they would do the natural economic thing you do with anything that is in short supply. Remember where plywood went about a year and a half ago?
Right.
Went to like $80 a sheet. And you go, why? Because for whatever reason, it was in big demand, short supply, and the price would go through the roof. And I think this is part of their plan. They're going to tell you, you walk onto a car lot and say, I want to buy a gas pickup truck. And they say, okay, it's right over there. It's $120,000. And you say, what? You say, yeah, we only got 12 of them. We got a whole bunch of these electrics that you don't want to buy, and we got 12 of these. So since we only have 12 of them, they're not quite a De Beers diamond, but they're real close. So that's what you're going to pay. They're going to punish people and say, see, electrics are affordable. Yeah, because you've artificially jacked the market to make the gasoline and
that's
diesel cars artificially expensive because the car companies weren't given the choice, as you should always be given. If you're making a product, you should say, we're making a product. Which one is the one that the public wants? Say, gasoline and diesel trucks. Say, okay, we're going to make a lot of those. And the government says, no, you're not. You're only going to make a few. And everybody who wants to buy one is going to pay through the nose. So it's only going to be rich people that drive pickup trucks. And it'll make the electric cars look good by comparison. Do you think that analysis is right?
I think that I never thought of that perspective. There's so many perspectives that this is just a terrible idea. And I go back to something you said. If the market was making this adjustment, I'm pretty confident we would get there. But I found that one third of all the charging stations in the Bay Area are out of order.
Yeah.
Now, just think about that. You're going to go to work, and a lot of Americans drive a long distance. And you know, look, I've got two small kids now, and stuff happens in life. Like, sometimes it takes me a while to do, you know, just go get groceries with two kids running around. Maybe I forget to charge my car. This is going to change our lives, and there's going to be a lot of stress of where do you charge? Who's building this network? Where is it being built? The amount of problems. But folks, this isn't just some law. This is now a reg that's in that you've got to kind of start to adjust for. This is going to fundamentally change our way of life. Now, all this power demand and, you know, just getting back, both these bills are problematic, both the electric car and this craziness that you're actually going to be able to produce power without carbon. Think about how much it's going to start to cost you to flip your switch at home. Think how much that the brownouts and problems we've had in the past, this could become part of American life.
Yeah, it could. Like it. I remember when we were watching Saddam Hussein and they said Tikrit is the only little city in that whole country that had the power turned on. Why? Because it was Saddam Hussein's hometown. And you say, well, okay, what about the rest of the country? They don't make enough power to keep all the lights turned on all the time. So you get 4 hours of power one day and 2 hours the next, and nobody ever gets 24 hours a day except Saddam. Well, that's where we're going to be. And they're doing it at the same time that they're saying, we're going to force you out of natural gas furnaces in your home. There's more demand. And we're going to force you out of natural gas water heaters. There's more electric demand. And they're ramping up the demand at the same time they're ramping down the supply. Econ 101 says that means the price of power is going to go out of sight.
Right.
And I mean, go ahead.
I used to live in Europe when I was young for a couple of years. And one thing that struck me is that they didn't have dryers. And when, you know, I was living over in Poland, they didn't have dryers because dryers take up a lot of electric. Well, okay, so what? You just, you get a clothesline, you hang your clothes up. Okay, great. Well, what I found is that, just imagine this, you take your time, and I would have to do this. You do your laundry every week, you put your underwear on that line, and it dries out and it comes off stiff as a board. So you got to start ironing your underwear. And you do that because electric's too expensive. Now, I just can't imagine an America where everyone's taking time out of their week to iron their underwear and their grocery, instead of having a nice big refrigerator full of food, everyone's living off of college dorm refrigerators. That's what we used to do when we were living there. And this is another way to think about this. This is a war on the suburbs. When you start doing this type of policy, and what's amazing is that the suburbs are really, the swing voters all live in the suburbs, and they're going to decide this upcoming election.
Then we need to make the issues clear to them. Adam, thank you very much. That's Adam Brandon, the president and CEO of FreedomWorks. We'll be back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on a First Amendment Friday, heading into Memorial Day weekend. And all I can say is, with two parents who served in the military and did not die in service, so that's not who we are honoring this weekend. We're honoring those people who served and died in the line of service in the defense of their country. Just remember, that's the purpose of all that. This segment is brought to you by the home power generating folks at ProTech Power. Make sure your loved ones are safe when the power goes out. 541-OWN-A-GEN. That's 541-OWN-A-GEN. Jason's on the line listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our flagship station, KXL. Jason, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Hey, love listening to your show. Listening to you always helps me remember I'm not crazy. I just live in a crazy town. You reassure me of that every day, and I appreciate
it. Thank you,
Lars. Quick couple of questions. They're probably going to lift the self-serve gasoline ban in Oregon, maybe even because the Senate's voting on it right now. What are your thoughts on that? Are you for it, against it? For me, it makes Oregon a little bit more normal if it goes through.
To get to where you can do self-service.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Look, it does make it like there are now two states out of 50, 58 if you're an Obama fan, who don't have self-service. I mean, well, Obama did say there were 58 states. He said, we visited this state, 57 more to go. Joe Biden, I think, went into the 60s. He apparently has no idea how many states there are. But 48 of the states allow self-service. But in some ways, Jason, I have no problem with people pumping their own gas. I have no problem with pumping my own gas. But I could see this argument. When you go to self-service, it doesn't go to self-service is allowed. It effectively mandates self-service. Because one time I drove to Seattle, I had to go to some event related to work, and I had to be dressed up for it. And I thought, shoot, I'm short of gas, and I want to be gassing up at midnight in downtown Seattle. And I looked around for a station where I'd get somebody to pump my gas. It's not available. Now, I guess in theory, it's available for people who are disabled. You can push a button and you'll get some help. I have no problem with allowing it. But in a lot of ways, allowing self-service means you ain't going to get any service. Nobody's going to pump your gas. And I will tell you that while Tina and I differ, I don't have a problem with pumping my own gas. Tina likes to get her gas in Oregon because of the huge price differential driven by Jay Inslee's crazy carbon tax, but also because she doesn't have to get out of the car and pump it in the rain and in the wintertime and all that. So is that a plus? Yeah. People have always told me, well, you know, if we do that, if we go to self-service, it'll get cheaper. I see no evidence to suggest that gasoline is cheaper in self-service states. It'll also unemploy some people, but I don't think the purpose of private industry is just to provide employment for people that, you know, for no reason. In other words, if Governor Kotek or Governor Inslee said, hey, Lars, you got to hire three more producers. Why? Well, we need to create some jobs. So hire three more producers and sit around and twiddle their thumbs. I'd say, well, no, I'm not going to do that. So I'm not for make work either. But maybe I haven't given you the answer that you were looking for, but I don't have a problem with it if the people of the state want it. But what I've begun to see so much from Salem and Olympia is we don't care what the people want. We're going to do whatever the elites tell us to do. And they do that all the time. So are you in favor of getting or allowing self-service, which will effectively mandate it?
I do. I am for it, just for the, I mentioned being a little more normal, getting Oregon a little more in line. But I just, anymore with the shortage, the closing lines, if I can get out, get in, get my gas, get out of there faster.
Yep.
I mean, similar to checking groceries. I can just, myself, I usually just can kick it out real quick and then move on. But, Lars, my other real quick question. They have, and this I consider a huge problem in Oregon, they've recommended tax reform in Oregon since, I think, since about the, since the 50s.
Yep.
And I've always said, I've always looked at it, and that doesn't mean pile on taxes and become California the way Dr. Ungovernable wanted years ago, but changing it to something that's, you know, that keeps a little more money in you and I's pocket, but then adequately.
And what would that system be? What would that system be?
You know, I don't know. I study a lot of it. I don't know if you're familiar with the site taxfoundation.org.
Have you ever looked at
that stuff?
Yeah, I have. But tell me what kind of tax, because let me warn you, the first tax in Oregon was a property tax because property can't be moved around, so they'd tax your property. Then they said, we need an income tax to provide for property tax relief. So they got an income tax, and now they got one of the highest income taxes in America, and they have high property taxes too. And then I hear people say, well, let's add a sales tax. If we give the government one more way to reach into your pocket, taxes will be lower. No, they won't. They'll take one more way to reach in your pocket, and they'll promise, if you give us a sales tax, we'll reduce your property or income taxes or both. It never works out that way. It's like walking into a casino. The house always wins. The player always loses. So when they promise you tax reform, give us one more way to tax you, and we promise we'll reduce some of your taxes. You wouldn't believe that, would you?
No. No, I don't think, like I said, if they get another one, or I mean, I'm just never a fan.
So what would you be in favor of? Get rid of the income tax, get rid of the property tax, fine. But the government is going to say, oh, if you do that, they always put a gun to the teacher's head or the cop's head. And they say, if you do that, we won't have cops and teachers, even though there are lots of things in state government that are not cops and they're not teachers, and they could be cut. And they don't want to do it. ODOT, for example, hasn't built a freeway in over 40 years. They have 5,000 full-time employees, and more than 1,000 of them make a six-figure income. That tells you where some of the excess is. It's right there. Jason, thanks for the call. It's the Radio Northwest Network.